It's time for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. One thing we've noticed about running a monthly media segment in 2018 is that the topics come fast and furious. We can try to lock up the topics a few days in advance, but the fire hose of news frequently shuffles our deck right up to the last minute. But that's okay. There's always plenty to talk about. And we do define media very broadly, taking in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. Our regular guests are here in a sense. Precious Yamaguchi from the communication faculty at Southern Oregon University is a perennial. She's back in the studio. Hi, Precious.
Hello. Good morning.
And because Andrew Gay couldn't get rid of his cough in time, Chris Lucas has stepped in from the communications faculty once again. Good to see you again, Chris.
Thanks. Good to see you, Jeffrey.
Good to have you guys here. Why don't we start, since this is the one we billboarded on the website, it's you know, like everything in the media. If it's more than 2 days old, it's getting a little rank out there. It's like last week's lilacs or something. But Michelle Wolf at the White House Correspondents' Dinner drew a broad range of condemnation. And before we list the clip, I just want to get some initial thoughts from either one of you about what you thought, what you made of the A, the presentation, and B, the reaction to it.
It was interesting to watch the audience from the beginning to the end. I thought in the beginning they were ready and they were in good spirits, and they saw that the jokes were going to be a little provocative, a little offensive, but you really see their faces change as time goes on. And I think her facial expression and the way that she delivers is such a part of her act, that she's smiling the whole time and has this type of like goofy way of delivery, but
like come on you guys
kind of thing. Yeah, but actually a lot of facts and really tackled a lot of individuals.
She did. I mean, it's meant to be a roast. I mean, and I'm surprised ever, and it seems to happen every couple of years, that it's taken in a spirit other than that.
Yeah, well, it seems like this is deja vu in a lot of ways. You know, I'm old enough to remember Don Imus and the Clintons in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. Remember this whole, he talked about Whitewater, and there was a big firestorm about that, and then Colbert, I guess.
Colbert, in 2011 or something.
Right,
yeah.
So in some ways, this feels like a bit of a familiar media narrative that crops up and people use particular jokes for political football for a couple of weeks. And in some ways, I'm kind of tired of that. I'm like, well, we kind of know this. We know this story. We know this routine. And it seems like just part of the game we play around this dinner.
Yes, that there'll be a blow up every couple of years. And the Colbert thing was interesting because that's the one I remembered as that triggered such a, oh, we need to have a much safer host next year. And they hired Rich Little, who was famous for doing impressions of Back to Richard Nixon.
Right.
They really went cream puffy the next year. So a lot was made about people in the media, reporters, including Andrea Mitchell from NBC News, said that an apology is owed to Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the White House for the comments about her looks. What I heard, and in fact what was said, because I looked up at the words, was that Michelle Wolf had said that Sarah Huckabee Sanders burns facts and uses the ashes to make a smoky eyeshadow. That was it. So, but here's the part that actually may have bothered people more than anything else. Here's a clip of Michelle Wolf's summation at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
There's a ton of news right now. A lot is going on, and we have all these 24-hour news networks, and we could be covering everything. But instead, we're covering like three topics. Every hour, it's Trump, Russia, Hillary, and a panel of four people that remind you why you don't go home for Thanksgiving. Milk comes from nuts now, all because of the gays. You guys are obsessed with Trump. Did you used to date him? Because you pretend like you hate him, but I think you love him.
Which raises the question, then, if maybe some of the umbrage that comes out of White House Correspondents' Dinners comes from the fact that the fun is getting poked at the people who invited the speaker in the first place.
Yeah, I think it's not surprising at all that, first of all, you're inviting a comedian. So in general, that's very risky in terms of all the things that they're going to cover. You know that they're going to make fun of you. And I think that whoever the comedian is and whatever jokes they say, it's not really going to change your opinion. You already know a lot of the things that they're saying through the news anyways. They're just making fun of it. So I don't think us listening to Michelle Wolf is going to completely change how we feel about the president or other people.
I'm kind of glad that the latter part of that routine is getting a little more attention now, because I thought she made some pretty trenchant critiques of the media's relationship to Trump and in the way that, you know, I mean, obviously the administration is very skillfully using the media to keep its attention on a lot of other issues besides the kind of stuff I think we should be talking about. But I really thought, I guess it was Terry Gross, actually, in Fresh Air, interviewed Michelle Wolf right after this.
In a couple of days.
Yeah, and I thought made a really interesting observation that there was there's a kind of asymmetry to the event if the president is not there. And that because, you know, the event usually entails the president taking his shots at the media and other public figures. And then, you know, the comedian comes up and does their bit. And this time without that balancing, aggressiveness, I guess, I think it just felt a little more out of place.
Which raises the question then, I mean, is the idea then that the comedian and the president will essentially take pot shots and then the media can kind of duck under the fire, and this time they got it more directly?
I think I'm really of two minds. I'm actually one of these people who thinks this event should be canceled, but if there is that balance, then it feels almost cozy and comforting. You're like, oh,
right.
You know, everything is as it should be. There's this balance in the world, the balance and the force. But that balance is also troubling, right? It's kind of too cozy, and it feels like, you know, especially in this day and age, we feel like that's a false kind of equivalence or too comfortable.
Well, then go ahead, Precious.
Oh yeah, and we should avoid that coziness because the journalists and the president, we're not all friends and working with each other. We're supposed to be journalists are supposed to be reporting and have a sense of not unbiased reporting. So it is important for it to not be, as Christopher says, like too cozy and too friendly.
Exactly where I was going, because you do teach young people about things like ethics in the media, and the idea of getting too close to people with whom you have naturally adversarial relationships must come up from time to time.
Yeah, I was in when I was taking journalism classes, it was kind of within that time of print media going into online media. And my journalism teacher, Mac McClary at Humboldt State University, he really, really pushed the idea that you don't take anything from anybody. If you're invited to dinner, you don't eat the food. If you're invited to some kind of corporation's grand opening and you're reporting about it, you don't take any swag bags. It's so different, I feel like, with online reporting and online journalism now, and the way in which a lot of companies and events, they use all these different type of incentives to get journalists to come, free food, free swag bags, lots of photos, those type of things. It's so different from what I was learning when I was in print media classes. You don't take anything.
So the same discussion's been going on, and it's probably for hundreds of years then, because the efforts go on. Because I heard the same thing from Dave Dugan at the University of Missouri. You know, if somebody offers you water, you can take it. If you're dying of thirst, basically, you can then take something from a source. But other than that, you make sure the relationship is above board.
One thing we talk about is in classes I teach is about, you know, the dance of journalists and people in power around the question of access, right? And they need access in order to write stories, to get information that feels fresh. But of course, there's a complex compromise going on there. And in my mind, this dinner just represents kind of the very apex of that compromise it's kind of troubling.
Signals and Noise is our monthly media survey here on the Jefferson Exchange. Precious Yamaguchi from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Chris Lucas in for Andrew Gay this time. You can join us. Your thoughts about some of the topics we're talking about, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So a lot of the world didn't even know the name Childish Gambino a week ago. Everybody knows the name, knows it as the alter ego for Donald Glover, who is an actor and singer and performer. And he put out this video called This Is America, timed to coincide with his appearance as the guest host and musical performer on Saturday Night Live, performing This Is America. And the video had my jaw on the floor. It was hard to describe because it's not necessarily comforting in any sense. I mean, people are getting shot with, you know, big spatters of blood and everything in this music video. But at the same time, it's so well done and compelling. I couldn't find myself stopped. Here's a clip that actually picks up in a section where there's already been one murder in this video by Childish Gambino as he performs it. And then we get into a room where there's a choir singing.
Get your in the This is America.
All right, so you probably surmised that the choir was gunned down by Childish Gambino at that point in the video. So, certainly viral. I mean, a lot of things to talk about here because we got gun violence in America. We have police brutality directed against African-Americans. Just a general sense about the fact that gun violence affects African-Americans more often. A lot of stuff to unpack in this video.
Yeah, I think that Donald Glover, he's the epitome of woke right now, like what we call woke, like informed but appropriately placing commentary and cultural issues into a creative form. And this is definitely a mix of all kinds of creative ideas and genres coming together. It's a mix of him singing, but also different other rappers and their music put together. And then we go from these transitions between dark and light. Even in the music, there's these light sounding kind of angelic moments and then something really dark. And also I felt that the way in which we see all these different types of issues that are about violence upon Black people and how it just passes through the news media, there's different times where there's weeks in which people are addressing it, but then it passes on. So I felt that the music video was sort of a commentary on that, how we have these terrible, violent things happening, but then it just transitions into like this type of song and dance.
Well, and as some people have pointed out, there's been a lot of analysis of the video, a lot of analysis.
Yeah.
And so, for example, people noticing that the guns in both of those shootings are put into gloves, or not into gloves, into soft cloth and taken off gently where the bodies are just hauled off.
Yeah, I think it's a video that you could watch over and over again and you'll notice so many different things, or you'll translate different moments into something different each time. But I think you could just see how talented he is. He mixes a type of modern and West African dance into something that is very contemporary, but also claims Black pride and its artistic movements and people and imagery. So there's just so much in there.
I think it's really sophisticated. I mean, the dance also drawing on a lot of really historical images and tropes and poses. A lot of that's come up in the commentary, of course, and the references to Jim Crow and other kind of historical and racist connotations. I think Glover himself is really fascinating to me. He seems like a really kind of the epitome of the modern star at the moment. I mean, he's across all sorts of media. I know Gambino's just kind of burst onto the national consciousness with his video, but Glover's been around for 10 years. One of these folks who came out of the internet, like a internet sketch comedy in around 2006 or 2007, is one of the youngest writers hired onto 30 Rock, moves into television. And it was right around then, I think this strategy actually of dropping several things simultaneously, he's done this before. Mm-hmm. The year he premieres on Community as one of the featured actors there is when Gambino, he drops that first album. And so from the beginning, and you know, he's been a very savvy media figure and using all kinds of media to get his messages out.
Knows how to make a media splash for sure. I want to give credit where credit is due because the Donald Glover, a.k.a. Childish Gambino video, does follow by several months the performance of Kendrick Lamar at the Grammys with very similar imagery. I mean, and darker imagery, in fact, on a darker stage with people going blam, 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 blam and falling on the stage at the Grammys. Kendrick Lamar won a Pulitzer Prize in this last month, too. So, but the larger question being about whether we relieve some pressure in society by showing some of the violence that we feel in society in popular culture, or whether we run the risk of making it bigger. And I wonder how you guys approach this as you talk to students of mass media.
He definitely uses Childish Gambino, or Donald Glover, uses what's happening around him as inspiration, as I think a lot of artists do. And I think that him working, the director of this video, Hiro Murai, who's a Japanese-American, also from Los Angeles like me, so I like to follow his work, that they stay pretty honest to what they want to include in terms of commentary and imagery. And all of these things that are happening or depictions of things that are happening in the video are all, I feel, and I don't know if other people agree, but related to what's happening in the news. So having a type of voice that addresses the news in a creative way, that's very powerful. I don't think that it is at risk of perpetuating it. I think that we need to address what is happening in real life, especially from the voices of people of color.
It's a way for us to talk about it, to
yeah,
get it out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of my take, too. The question of whether media is reflecting or creating culture, right, is one of the trickiest questions at the core of thinking about media. My take is often that it's doing both and at once, but it's what's really important is it's creating conversation. And for an artist like Childish Gambino to get us talking about this, thinking about it, and especially in a pretty historically sophisticated way, I think is really valuable.
All right. This is Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange with Precious Yamaguchi and Chris Lucas from the Communication Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Let's move on to talk about AT&T in the news a couple times this week, asking the Supreme Court to cripple the Federal Trade Commission's authority over broadband. What's that about?
Well, these policy discussions, they get really thorny quickly. And, of course, there's a big history here, going back, well, at least till 2014, I think, was the origin of this case. And, AT&T really would like to have the FTC's regulatory authority diminished over them as a common carrier, right? So phone companies historically have been treated as common carriers, and by law, the FCC is the dominant regulatory authority over that kind of company. But the FTC is also, has kind of been outsourced to take care of some issues around privacy and deceptive ad practices and so forth. So this was the nature of the FTC's complaint on AT&T, claiming they were already engaged in violating net neutrality and throttling data for certain customers. And then that goes to court, and it's been through several rounds of court cases. It now seems on the cusp of going to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court will decide whether the FTC has the authority to regulate common carriers. And it's sort of hard to say where it's going to go.
Right, because we get FCC, FTC, we get Congress, right. we get the AT&T Time Warner merger, Congress involved as well, and things get mighty confusing pretty fast on the telecommunications front.
Yeah, we call this certiorari, where the higher court reviews what's happening. And so back in 2014, it was found that AT&T could have been throttling almost 90% of their broadband during that time. So it's really important, I think, for us to follow what's been happening from 2014 to now. I'm excited to see what will come about.
I think at this moment, too, we have the FCC has been sort of stepping away from some of its regulatory role. And ironically, part of its argument was, well, the FTC is handling a lot of this. We don't need to be as engaged in protecting consumers because we have the FTC. And then the FTC is trying to fill that role, but is finding itself in court and trying to do that.
Wow. All right. So amazing stuff. And then we also have let's move on to the pick threes. I want to give you guys enough time to talk about your pick threes for the month, about three items in the media that you were paying close attention to. Why don't we start with Precious?
Yeah, I was really excited this past Monday. Every first Monday of May, they have the Met Ball Gala in New York City. And this year, their theme was Heavenly Bodies. There was a lot of controversial outfits, but I watched it all unfold on Instagram through the Vogue magazine channel. And so that was really, really great. Katy Perry had a huge, gigantic set of wings. Frances McDormand, who we tend to not think of as like a fashion icon person, had one of the most amazing outfits. So definitely look that up. I like the book. I always have a book, I know, on our pick three, but I love to read. It's by Wilbert Rideau, and it's called In a Place of Justice. He was in prison in a southern Louisiana prison for 40 years, but is also an award-winning journalist because he created this publication called The Angleite. And in that publication, he really shed light on prison life and what was happening in the South during that time. And then also we had our Ashland Film Festival. And so I like this film a lot called Minding the Gap by Bing Liu. I thought it was going to be a skateboarding film, but it was actually surprisingly a film about domestic violence and how prevalent it is.
Really?
Yeah. So I was there ready to watch like a skateboarding documentary. Mm-hmm. But actually what everyone had in common was domestic violence in their lives.
Wow. Okay. Yep. That's an amazing twist. Mm-hmm. And still you liked it.
It was informative. It wasn't one that I left the theater happy.
Okay. And Chris Lucas, your pick three for the month.
Well, a couple things. There's a film that closed the Tribeca Film Festival a couple weeks ago called The Fourth Estate by the documentarian Liz Garbus, which is about the New York Times sort of battle with Donald Trump. Yeah. So quite – but it's I hear it's going to be premiering on Showtime actually at the end of this month, so something to look out for. Garbus is fantastic. Her last film was What Happened to Miss Simone, which is a great documentary. Also been enjoying discovering the comedian John Mulaney, who's
on Saturday Night Live.
Raised on Saturday Night Live recently. He has a new special on Netflix called Kid Gorgeous, and he's just a really old school style storyteller, comedian, and I just really enjoy his work. The other I'm going to do is more local, but it's sort of media related. Down at the collaborative theater project down in Medford, they have a show opening on June 1st, Moonlight Magnolias, which is about the creation of Gone with the Wind. You know, the process of writing and bringing that movie to fruition. So that looks really fun.
Moonlight and Magnolias?
Moonlight and Magnolias.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you both for coming in. Chris Lucas in particular for filling in for Andrew Gay, who can't stop his cough around a microphone or anywhere else.
Get well soon, Andrew.
All right.
Yes,
Signals
Andrew.
And Noise for this month with Chris Lucas and Precious Yamaguchi. Thanks again.